The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
It's nice to be back here. In a way, I think what we're trying to do here is pretty simple. To be present for what's happening. Just to be here, to connect, to know what we're experiencing as we experience it. As you may have noticed, this sounds simple, but it's not so easy. To stay present and to stay connected continuously is not easy. Our thinking mind sort of spins out to the past and the future. Stories, memories, fantasies. And it's easy to get lost in that. We lose our connection to this moment. The good news is that there's sort of a shortcut to staying present. And it involves being mindful of something that is always in the present. That's our bodies. So I thought tonight I would talk a little bit about mindfulness of the body. When we talk about the body, I guess what we mean is tuning in to the direct physical sensations, not kind of ideas about the body. It's more like the felt, the actual experience of the body from the inside. And in this way, the body becomes our anchor to the present moment. I think people who maybe have never meditated or have only read about Buddhism may be a little bit surprised at how important the body is in this practice. Traditionally, meditation teachers, going back to the Buddha himself, suggested the body as kind of the primary place, the first place to establish our mindfulness. And even though it can be where we begin practicing, it's not something that's just for beginners. I think it's a very significant, very profound place to develop, to cultivate awareness. It's a place where the whole path of this practice can be discovered, is in the body. There's an expression in Zen that's it's kind of like you get Zen through the pores of your skin. And I think it's the same is true for Vipassana. It's not something that you kind of finally understand by thinking about it. It's more physical than that. It's more elemental. The body absorbs something. And sometimes the body is what brings us to practice in the first place. I think because we identify so much with the body as ourself, whenever something happens that kind of interrupts or upsets or disturbs that image of ourself, maybe it's an illness, a disease, an accident or a trauma, or just aging. We sense the impermanence of the body. And because we've identified so much with the body as ourself, this can create some stress, can create suffering. In my case, I first came to meditation and yoga through a health crisis. And I became quite ill. And I discovered the, maybe some of you have heard of it, the mindfulness-based stress reduction, MBSR program. And I thought it was so helpful. It was something that I could do, bringing this form of awareness, this non-reactive awareness, and somehow it shifted something for me, changing the relationship or how I related to my body. And I think one of the things I discovered is that, and this may be true for you, but I have sort of a complicated relationship with my body. On the one hand, fundamentally, you know, it is me. It feels like me. It's, you know, it's my existence in space and time. But on the other hand, I can't control it. You know, it sort of control it. But I can't stop it from aging. I can't stop it from getting sick. And I think there can be a lot of momentum in our modern world that keeps us separate from our body, maybe a little bit split off from the body. You know, sometimes an illness or a trauma can make it kind of physically or psychologically painful to be in the body. So we retreat into our heads, our thinking. Sometimes the momentum of our work, you know, a kind of professional job, you know, we're in our heads all day, we're on the computer all day, you know, we don't feel our body. And there can even be cultural reasons why, you know, being in the body, or especially feeling pleasure in the body, it is not a good thing. In this mindfulness-based stress reduction, one of the practices is doing a body scan. You know, so you lay on the floor and you systematically feel your body from the soles of your feet, and you go all the way up to your head. And when I would do that, I was surprised to discover that there were parts of my body that I couldn't really feel. You know, they were kind of frozen or numb. You know, so that happens. And I think this practice, this meditation practice, is inviting us to look at the way we relate to our body. And maybe learning to relate to our body in a new way. And I can just speak, you know, about my experience, but I think for me it's been, I would characterize it as a kind of a journey towards intimacy with the body, with the actual experience of having a body, as opposed to, you know, kind of what the body may look like from the outside. So we may experience them as separate, but you know, I would suggest that the body, the mind and body, are not two things. And the essence of this practice is something about learning to experience the mind and body as one thing. It's kind of the unification. of the mind and the body. So over and over again, we bring the mind into the body. And so one of the things about bringing the mind and the body is it gets us out of our thinking mind. You know, there's nothing wrong with thinking, but thoughts kind of have a pull, and it's easy to get drawn into the contents of thoughts. It can be difficult to just see them as thoughts. And when we tune into the direct experience of physical sensations, you know, before language, before concepts, we're able to connect to something that's more alive, I think. It gives us the possibility for the body to wake up. So, in one way, the body is a window into the mind, kind of a mirror that reflects the mind. Thoughts, emotions, intentions, they all live in the body, or, you know, express themselves through the body, or make imprints. I know for myself, when I have anxiety, I really feel it in my stomach. And when I get angry, my face gets red. My ears get my ears feel red now, but I'm not angry. my mom's cat died today, so I'm a little sad about that, but not angry. Emotional states like fear, like anger, can often manifest as knots of tension in the body. And knowing that for a meditator is very useful, because it's like the body can become this honest, reliable indicator of what's happening in our mind. One of the most useful pieces of advice I ever got about meditation from Joseph Goldstein. I can't remember if he told me this or he said it in a talk. Maybe he said it in a talk. But he said, it's whenever there is any sense of tension or any sense of struggle in the meditation, it is a sign that something is not being open to. You know, something needs to be kind of open to, something needs to be accepted. Isn't that great? I mean, it's like this great feedback loop. And when I sit sometimes, I just sit and I wait, you know, and I wait to see where is there tension, you know, where is there any struggle. Contraction in the body is a sign of resistance in the mind. And so, you know, so a big part of this practice, I think, is connecting to the body, and it's like learning to read the body, learning to read the language of the body. I know for me, when I'm, kind of striving, you know, kind of pushing or striving in meditation, there's a kind of, my shoulders get tense and I'm leaning forward. I may not be able to notice that mentally I'm pushing or I'm striving, but I notice the body, you know, and I kind of, oh, okay, relax. So I think that's one thing, you know. The mind affects the body. Conversely, how we place our body affects our mind. Anyone who practices yoga knows that forward bends have a way of being very soothing, very calming. You know, it's like child's pose. You kind of just go all the way down. And back bends are very opening and very energizing. So how we place the body affects the mind. And this is one reason why in meditation, posture is considered very important. So something about sitting very upright and keeping the back as straight as you can. There are a few benefits for this. First of all, when we sit up straight, it sort of creates its own source of alertness, of attentiveness, and of dignity. You know, it's like you don't usually see the Buddha kind of, sitting up straight. So that said, it's like I highly recommend when meditating, to try to find your best posture, That said, I think the most important thing is to feel it from the inside. It's not really about how it looks, but it's like, posture is something that's very dynamic. And just to get as much support as you can, and we continuously come back to build the posture. It's like, it's not one thing. It's rigid. It's very dynamic. You feel it from the inside. And when your posture is good and stable, it creates a very good container. And it's like, I think about it as it's a container that is so strong and is so stable that it can hold anything. It can hold any kind of physical or emotional discomfort. So classically, the instructions for mindfulness of the body start with the breath. Training the mind to stay with the breath is a way of training the mind to stay in the present moment. Working with the breath is a very powerful practice. I feel, one of the things I'm most grateful for in my life has been learning, discovering, learning about mindfulness of breathing. So for one thing, the breath is always happening. It's continuous. And so it's something we can always tune into. Something about the fact that the breath is moving and it's rhythmic, I think makes it easier to stay with it. And it can be very calming, it can be very soothing. I mean, one of my favorite ways of falling asleep on the meditation cushion, but also in bed, is just to lay there and just feel the breathing. So it can be very calming, very soothing, and we can learn little ways of adjusting the breathing to make it even more relaxing. So, you know, I encourage you to kind of explore the breath. Classically, there are two places to feel your breathing. One is at the nostrils, and the other one is at the belly. Some people feel very strongly that, you know, you only do it at one place or the other. I've worked a lot with both, and I think they're both wonderful places to train your mind. You know, the breath is one of the places where the mind and the body come together. So, you know, it affects our emotional state, and it is affected by our emotions. And I think one of the key things about the breath is something about finding out what is the difference between allowing the breath versus controlling it. I think about it as not like I breathe, but more like you're being breathed by something. And the point is not to change the breath, but just to tune in to how it happens to be. You know, the breath can be long, it can be short, it can be deep, it can be shallow. Can be transparent. You know, at times it can even seem like the breath has disappeared. You know, and the point is just to know it, just to see it as it is. So I talked about breath, talk about posture. You know, when we attend to the posture, it's like you check into the whole body and check to see if there's any tension or anything that can be softened or relaxed in the body. I think learning to relax, learning how to relax has been such a big part of my practice. It's a little bit of a riddle of how do you stay upright and totally upright, but totally relaxed. And when I first started sitting, and this was in the Zen tradition, so the Japanese style, it's like I thought, okay, I'm just going to stay as tight as I can, and just don't move, and just grit my teeth. And it's a big mistake. It's like the more relaxed you can be, actually, the more still you can be. And I feel like the path of this practice is a path towards deeper and deeper relaxation. One thing about relaxation is it sends a message to the mind and the body that things are okay. You know, and I think so often we kind of go through the day bracing ourselves. You know, I feel it like when I drive. You know, I'm kind of contracted and braced. So when we can relax the body, it's like, you know, things may not be perfect, but things are okay. I'd like to say a little bit about working with pain or working with discomfort. You know, anytime we try to sit and be still and not move, there will be discomfort. There will be some kind of physical pain. You know, so if you have pain in the knee or pain somewhere, it doesn't mean that, you know, it's doing something wrong or it's a mistake. I think the first thing is to make sure that whatever pain you're experiencing is, I want to say, safe, or is, you know, is not damaging your body. I know meditators who have actually damaged their body because they've sat for so long through so much pain, and that's not the point. At the same time, it's like there's something about this. There's a value in learning how to be with discomfort, and not avoid it, and being able to hold it. So, you know, I think one good rule of thumb is if when you get up the pain goes away, then it's probably okay. if it doesn't go away, that's not good. So one thing about physical discomfort in meditation is it gives us a chance to discover what is the difference between the actual pain and kind of our mental reactions to it. I've often had this experience of, you know, sitting and wanting to be very still and having a lot of pain, you know, in my knee or something, and just waiting for the bell, you know, waiting for the bell. When is he going to hit the bell? Waiting. You know, and then finally, the teacher hits the bell, and then my pain went away. You know, it didn't move at all. Pain went away, and you know, so there's something about that. It's like how much of it is the actual physical sensation, and how much of it is our stories. That, you know, the thinking, the stories, tend to solidify it. If we just tune into the actual sensations, you know, it may not be so bad. So just a few strategies for working with pain. You know, I talked about before, relaxing. You know, often when there's a pain somewhere in the body, the rest of the body tenses up. So if you can relax the whole body, often the pain gets better, a little bit. You can play with, you know, zooming in to feel, you know, to feel the little tiny sensations that make up the pain, and you know, it's like, you know, pain is not one thing. It's something. It's made up of these tiny little things, and they're moving and they're changing, and so sometimes that can be helpful. Another thing that can be helpful is to zoom out and just have a very, very big, wide angle. You know, it's like you become the sky, and which can hold anything. The sky is big enough to hold whatever comes up. And then when all those things fail, just move. But try to move slowly and move mindfully. You know, and it's... you know, so many times I've tried to stay so still, and then finally, you know, I give up and I move, and it doesn't help. Then it's still, you know, kind of squirming or something. I think one of the other good things about mindfulness of the body is that it can be a bridge that connects us, you know, from our sitting practice to everyday life. It's not so practical to stay with your breath, you know, all day long. It's possible, but it's you're gonna, you won't be able to really interact with people. But staying in the body is a wonderful practice. Keeping the mind in the body as you move, as you walk, as you drive. Slow, mindful eating is sometimes recommended. I had lunch a few days ago in Oakland, and then, you know, maybe some of you have been to Zachary's Pizza in Oakland. It's great, great pizza. And I was in such a rush that it was a little embarrassing to say. I got the pizza and I was going to eat it in the car, you know, before driving somewhere. And I ate it so fast that it just kind of went straight into my stomach. And, you know, I didn't really taste it at all. I mean, I knew it was good, but each bite, I just couldn't wait for the next bite and the next bite. And then it was gone. So something about slow, mindful eating, and it's this fundamental principle that anything can be in meditation when we bring a certain kind of attention to it. Another practice that sometimes is very helpful is to feel your body when you're in conversation with other people. It's like it's so easy to get into the content of the conversation. And, you know, the other person's talking, you're just ready to, you know, thinking about what you're going to say next, you know, and you have a chance and you say it. And then they say something, and you're totally out of your body. So something about, I don't know why this comes up to me, but I feel like I first noticed someone do that. The first person I noticed really do that practice was Gil. And I remember trying to talk to him and get his attention. He was doing something, and he wouldn't look at me until he finished what he was doing. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. You know, something about staying in your body and doing one thing at a time. So how we know the body, how we know our body, is through our perception of it. You know, it's through this mental faculty of perception. And like everything else, perception, it changes. You know, it's conditional. You know, so as the mind calms and as the body calms, you know, and as our mindfulness becomes sharper, our sense of the body can change. You know, so the boundaries of the body can feel like they expand, they can shift, you know, you can even have a sense that they dissolve. We may start to question, you know, what is the body? So I think at first when we start practicing, the body seems so solid. It seems so self-existing. But the more we practice, the more we attend to just the sensations of the body, getting it, dropping below the thinking mind, we can start to sense something about the emptiness of the body, or the emptiness of these conventions. And so I think the last thing I want to say is that I think of mindfulness, I think of this way of giving attention as a form of respect, as a form of love. And when we, you know, it's kind of like a gift you give to yourself to do mindfulness of the body. We can come into a relationship of a kind of deep trust or a deep respect for our bodies. And, you know, it's like, the body's like, finally, you know, someone's listening to me. And I think from that, wisdom just grows. Maybe that's enough. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Your experiences with the body?
If no one else is going to say something, this is this probably isn't exactly on the line you might be expecting, but I had a really cool experience with my body. I think it was Sunday I was here, and I was kind of getting a cold, and this guy Dante, he said, you know what's real good? If you're starting to get a cold, to use hydrogen peroxide and put it in each ear, a couple of drops, because they've done studies that show that the colds sort of start there. And it was the coolest experience, because you're all of a sudden really quiet with your body. You can hear your heart beating in your ear, and there's like little fizzling. And I mean, it's the closest I've been to my body in years. It's really cool. You got to kind of lean over on something so it doesn't dribble down your neck. But it's really neat. And you can like, I mean, I'm a terrible meditator, but like 10 minutes I was really quiet on one side and then I did the other side.
I was wondering what you could say to the body when maybe it has a hard time falling asleep and also staying asleep.
One of the things I've noticed about long-time meditators, and I would say especially meditation teachers, is that they're amazing sleepers. I mean, they can really sleep, you know, anywhere. And I think there's something, it's like, you know, for we can't will ourselves to fall asleep. You know, falling asleep, like meditation, it isn't something you do. It's something you kind of let go into or allow. You know, it's like create the conditions, and then it just happens, you know. And so I think I used to have, you know, I don't know if it would be insomnia, but it just kind of staying awake, and you know, especially when I'd have to get up at a certain time in the morning, and just staring at the alarm clock and thinking and thinking, you know, and this memories, fears, oh yeah, I'm going to die, you know, and that comes up, and, you know, can't look forward to that, you know. So for me, one of the things that has really helped me in that has been the breath, you know. And what I do is I don't sleep on my back, but before sleep, I lay on my back and just kind of do a little bit of a scan to just totally relax, you know, just let your body sink into the bed or the floor, wherever you are, and then I bring the attention to my belly, and just, you know, and you can put your hand there, and I just, you know, just feel the sensations of breathing. And I would say in 5 seconds or 10 seconds, you know, just you can get really good at. I know people who can do it, and even less than that. There's something about the rhythm, and I think it's, you know, it's like you. I don't want to say you turn off your thinking, but it's like you give your attention something else to occupy it. Another thing that can be helpful, you know, sometimes if there's a lot of thinking, and I don't know if that's, you know, if that's the situation with you, but if there's a lot of thinking, it can also be helpful to put a small word, you know, so it could be, you know, it could be you know, any word that you know. Sometimes I use the word ease, you know, say ease, you know, especially if I'm trying to relax. You could count, you know, you count one, you know, the out-breaths, 1, 2. You know, so you can experiment with it, and I think the more relaxed you are before you go to sleep, the easier it is to stay asleep. You know, I think that's my experience. When I'm thinking about something or nervous, or I know I have to wake up, you know, if I'm catch a flight the next morning, you know, I'll wake up every hour and kind of like check. No, it's like. So I think, like, you know, it's like, just like with meditation, you can't force yourself to be concentrated. You can't force yourself to be peaceful, but you can create the conditions, you know. So that's, you know, other things are, you know, not to be looking at the computer or something, some bright screens before, and take a hot bath about 45 minutes before, and those, you know, just kind of basic sleep. Good sleep hygiene. I hope that's helpful.
And just a quick comment. You mentioned a word when you're trying to get very real relaxed. You mentioned the word ease. One I found really helpful, I use quite a bit, is dissolve.
Beautiful. We're going to try that. Yeah, there's something about having a word or having you know, typically in Vipassana practice, we're not using a word so much as a mantra, you know, but more as a note to describe what's happening, you know. But sometimes it's helpful to, you know, have a, you know, repeat something over and over. Thank you.
I guess I got a question too. This is a little more difficult. When I meditate, no problem. I dissolve, get very relaxed, and I'm on my breath continuously. I like to tie into my body more when I'm on my breath, but to do that, I have to take some of my attention from the breath to my body. And I can do that. I can get very, very relaxed and feel my body inside, throughout, and so on and so forth. Or pick a spot on the body someplace and give attention to that. But I get feels a little awkward. If am I on my breath or am I on my body? I could choose just to strictly stay on my breath, and not let my attention get into my body, but I don't. Have you any comment on that?
When you stay on your breath, where in the body do you tend to feel it? Is it, do you have one place, or do you feel the breath come?
On my breath, I feel it in my, I generally know it in my nostrils.
In the nostrils.
But I also feel a sensation throughout my body. And maybe I'm asking, should I give that more attention? I don't know.
I think that, you know, it's up to you, and it's there's no right way or wrong way. I think if you feel like you have some momentum of staying with the breath, you know, at the nostrils or, you know, the chest, you know, I think there's no particular reason to leave the breath, you know. If something comes up that's very compelling, like, you know, like a really strong pain in the knee or a really persistent thought, then it's like, you know, you've got to kind of acknowledge it and turn to it. But if you feel like you can stay with the breath, I recommend to just stay with it and just go as deeply as you can into the breath. That said, you know, it's good to occasionally check in with the body, because if you're too much with the breath, it's not wrong, but it's possible to kind of you lose that kind of whole body awareness. You know, so, but I think basically, you know, the breath is everything. The whole path is you can find through the breath. There's no reason to leave the breath if you don't have to. So I would feel very, you know.
No, that's good. I don't feel I have a problem, but what you said helps. Thank you.
So you said that if the pain doesn't go away after you stop sitting, then that wasn't good. Is there a way to tell, you know, before that, while you're sitting, before it's too late? Yeah.
One time, a friend, a student, you know, a fellow yogi, asked the teacher. He said, when I sit, I get this terrible pain in my knee, and I'm worried I'm going to damage my body. And the teacher said, what are you saving it for? What are you saving your body? And I don't think that's, you know, that's not the attitude we are cultivating. I think the way I know it is just from experience. You know, when I first started sitting, I would get very nervous if even my foot would fall asleep. You know, I said, like, my foot's asleep, you know, and it's like, you're imagining it kind of turning blue, and I would, you know, immediately move. And then I realized that, you know, if I didn't move, eventually after 10 or 20 minutes, the blood would start to flow again. And then sometimes it wouldn't. And sometimes it would be 30 or 40 minutes, and then I'd get up, and it would be a little bit numb, and I'd kind of shake it out, and then it'd be okay. Now, it never falls asleep. I don't know. I think this is kind of, the body just finds different ways of adjusting. So I think part of it is just your own experience, and I want to say your intuition, but it's tricky. I mean, is there a particular place in the? Is it your leg? Is it the leg, or is it?
It's usually in my knees, right? Yeah. In here, and It does go away. I've never. It doesn't last so long after I sit that I can remember being concerned about it. So it would be helpful if while I'm sitting, I could, you know, if I could tell myself, well, the sit's not going to last. You know, usually, I don't. The longest I sit is with other people for maybe 60 minutes is the longest I sit. And so if I knew that I really couldn't hurt myself by staying still for 60 minutes, I can sit with it, but it would ease my mind. It would make it easier to continue sitting if I knew that I was going to be okay afterward.
Right. I think if it goes away relatively soon after you get up, that's a good sign. The other thing is that it can be helpful to kind of improve your setup, you know. And if you're having, you know, sometimes I see people sitting and I think, well, they could really use more height, you know, in the cushion, and to really sit more forward on the cushion so the kind of, you know, you can get that, you know, the back can kind of has support to stay straight. You know, so you can, you know, I'm happy to look at your setup, you know, how you sit, because it makes a big difference. If I were just sitting on a really thin cushion or just on the floor, I know my legs would fall asleep. And it's not like that's terrible, but it's also like, that's not exactly the point. You know, so it's not, you know, you can be just as mindful on a, you know, on a relaxing breath than you can on, you know, excruciating pain in your knee. You know, either one is okay to become mindful.
It does help me stay present.
Right. Pain is the best teacher. Pain really can concentrate the mind. So I think it's that balance between trying to not give yourself unnecessary pain. And it's not about kind of, you know, the more I suffer is, you know, the more, is the deeper my practice or something. You know, but at the same time, it's like there's always going to be something. So, I don't know if that helps, but I think listen to your body. I mean, I would err on the side of not damaging your body. You know, it's not, there's no, there's no kind of gold star, although, you know, sometimes I feel like that. You know, it's like, and I would say is the more you sit, you know, that those pains tend to go away. You know, it's like
so.
Okay, thank you very much. Good evening.